a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, kids, here we go. Episode 303. I got 303 coming from the 303. Oh, man. I am coming out of the 303. Oh, man, I am back in the 303. I tell you what, man, I live in a city. I live in a big, fat city with traffic, with lots of traffic, and people who tailgate you, and where tons of people live in close proximity and get in their cars and go right close to each other very quickly and slam their brakes on and cause lots of traffic. Did I mention the traffic in the city I live in? I was in small towns in the Midwest long enough to go native again. Man, I tell you what, I grew up in a town of 4,000 people with, I think, like one stoplight when I was there. Like one stoplight. Yeah, and I think everything else was a four-way stop in our town. Yeah, I had one stoplight. I mean, if you drove more than 5 minutes in any direction, you were pretty much in three directions. You were in the country. You drove 5 minutes in the fourth direction, you were in Flat River. Flat River. I said Flat River. I've been gone long. I call Flat River Flat River. And I've dwelled most of my life in college towns and small towns in the Midwest and in small towns in California and Ventura, you know, I mean, it's a town. It's not a small town, but I mean, it's like 100,000 people or something. So it's still a pretty small city, you know, and I had just gotten used to being in a city, and I was even kind of digging it. I was griping about the traffic and all, but you know, I kind of like the feverish, kind of like there's a lot of people here, you know. And I went back to the Midwest and was hanging out like in small towns and driving across vast open plains, sometimes being the only car that I could see in any direction for a few minutes at a time. I mean, out in the middle of nowhere. And I just something. Yeah, man, I went native. I mean, I went absolutely native. Oh, happened in Ventura one time, man. I went back just for too long to my old stomping grounds in Ventura. And something switched in me to like, I live here mode. And when I came back, it was just brutal. Yeah, yeah, I live in a city with traffic and people, lots of people in traffic. So I went to Emo's for lunch on the day that I left too. I went back to Emo's Pizza. If you can trump Kansas City barbecue, I put on Facebook, I'm like, if you go to Emo's Pizza two days in a row when you're surrounded by good Kansas City barbecue and you love nothing more in this world than barbecue, chances are you are someone who grew up near St. Louis and you haven't been home in a while. I mean, I didn't realize how much I was craving Emo's till I had it once. Then I woke up the next day and I just wanted like more Emo's pizza. It's something they put in that Provol cheese weird stuff, man. They put a chemical additive in it that makes you crave it fortnightly. Anybody, if you have ears to hear. I totally just blew off. I just realized like day one, and that there's just no way I was going to be able to stick to the whole paleo thing. in on the road in the Midwest, it was just like almost impossible. And so I kind of threw in the towel. I basically got there like late at night on Thursday and had to find something to eat, and finding paleo food in Atchison, Kansas at that time of night was not going to happen. And, the next day it was Friday. I'm like, where am I going to get like baked fish with vegetables or whatever? I probably could have figured it out. But anyway, I threw in the towel, trying to get back on the bandwagon now. I just kind of threw all, I had kind of planned if I went to the symposium, I was going to kind of have like a little cheat couple days, and it kind of turned into the whole trip. You know, I kind of planned at the beginning of Lent secretly. I didn't tell you about it, but it was kind of secretly in the back of my mind that I was going to cheat during those couple days at the symposium, and it kind of turned into the whole trip. But, and just road food, God, just eating just like tons of crap. I don't eat fast food very much, and I just ate tons of crappy fast food on the way there and back, and just, you know, just, oh man, just rough. And, but I got up this morning, I weighed myself, and I only gained like 3 or 4 pounds. You know, which is probably some of its inflammation and stuff from like water weight and stuff. So, I mean, I thought I was going to like completely just undo everything that I'd done in the last few weeks. So I put a few pounds on, literally three point three pounds or something. So that's fine. I'll take it. Yeah. So I broke my drive up on the way back. I thought maybe it was just being tired and the frustration and the stress of having to get there was what kind of kept me from getting into my driving zen last time. After talking, I was just thinking, you know what? I used to be able to do this when I was younger. I've realized now why I love the idea. I talked about this the other day and I've been reflecting on this. I figured out why I love the idea of long drives, because I used to love them. I used to totally dig them. I used to be able to completely zen out and just kind of like get really contemplative and just kind of still myself and just get in this super recollected state where I was just in the moment being while driving, doing my thing, just, and then creative thought coming and insights and ideas, you know, a lot of times in silence. Back then, usually probably when I was younger, probably, with music going, probably fairly hard music at times, and maybe at night listening to like Over the Rhine and kind of like some softer kind of alternative music, probably chain smoking. Camel Reds. I used to smoke, so I was probably smoking in the car back then. But I just kept asking myself, why am I so unable to just zen out? And as I started thinking about it, it's a myriad of things. And the number one is cell phones. It's just, I think that, you know, is this, I ask myself, is it cell phones? Is it just responsibilities? Is it my age? Is it sin? Is, you know, and I'm like, wow, I was sinful when I was young. And I can't imagine getting older and less young and impetuous would make you be able to focus less and kind of get in the moment. And it's just responsibilities in a cell phone that ties me to those responsibilities. That's what it comes down to. I was just checking email every time I got a signal, just like, and worried about something blowing up back in Denver or something, and worried about, you know, just everything. And, you know, I'm telling you, I think that just, I've gotten agitated in my mind from all of the media, just media consumption, cell phone use, and just constant, you know, check in. I think it's affected me. Even when I didn't have a signal, I couldn't let go of it. I couldn't have that detachment, right? And, you know, I rehashed, I was in my mind, I was just thinking about, if you've been listening for a while, you've heard me either reference or you heard the actual episode, about the lake in Wyoming. For you new listeners, there was a time I was up in Lander, Wyoming, helping the second trip up building Crux Coffee. And it was the first day, the first time up going to visit to do the measurements and take pictures and get ready to design Crux Coffee. And I had a day to kill and I wanted to go look at this place where they do rock climbing, because I was going to try to mimic some of the ideas in the possibility of putting this this climbing wall that we put into this little coffee house, right? Long story, super cool. And I took a wrong turn. I ended up on this long dirt road, this gravel road in my rental car, and it went between these two highways for 22 miles out in the middle of nowhere. And at one point I stopped and I had my own private mountain lake. I had a mountain lake. Now you're thinking, oh, I just need to get some stillness. I need to get some beauty. I need to get out in the nature. I need to get away from all this. Then I could be silent. Then I could be still. Then I could be recollected. Then I could be for a moment, right? And it's just, you know, I had a mountain lake with just nothing but the wind waves on lapping, and this beautiful sunny day, literally an eagle flying over. That was the only noise. And someone had chopped a log like into a stump and set it on the beach to sit on and look at this grandeur. And it was the perfect height for me. And I still could not get past the distraction in my mind and the numbness in my heart. And that I had a really similar experience with this drive this time. And when that happened last time, it caught my attention and it made me think about things. It made me consider some stuff. All right, let's go to the break. And when we get back, I got more up my sleeve. You're listening to The Counterposition. Be right back.
Well, I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
Well, I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. The only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your back in the heart of traffic, also known as Denver, Colorado, host Andrew Whaley. And man, I tell you what, I walked back into the fire hose of reality. Just it's like crazy work stress and last minute like requests from people that required like tons of work and just traffic and people and idiots almost hitting me. And I go from like sleeping in hotels by myself to a big, nice house that I love, full of people that I love. But I come home to like people in my space and like Perry, my roommate's sick. So like I go upstairs to get away from him. I'm just like, oh my gosh. And maybe I did get myself kind of like dialed down and I just didn't notice it, but man, I felt it when I got in. All right. So, well, we've talked about the Benedict option. Now I want to talk about the nuclear option because, it looks like, they're going to, the Democrats are filibustering, and I guess they're going to, I'm not sure if they did it yet or not. It looks like they are going to use the so-called nuclear option, and they are going to change the rules to where you only need a simple majority so that they can get Neil Gorsuch in. And here's the thing. I don't even really want to talk about Gorsuch and the you know, the details of this process and, you know, the filibuster and how that works and all that. It's just, look, and they're calling him this far right candidate, right? And it's funny. I was talking to my almost daughter, Clara, when I was out in Kansas City, and we were talking about a lot of politics and stuff, and she's pretty liberal and I'm this old conservative, and but we love each other and we're both striving for truth and understanding. And so we're kind of like, hey, let's dive in and talk about this stuff. So we dove in, and she was telling me how one of her older friends told me that and she would seem kind of shocked by this, that Republicans and Democrats used to be friends. Like they used to like actually kind of get along, and they'd hammer stuff out and compromise and work. And it didn't used to be that. And I'm like, here's the thing. There used to be enough common overlap because there used to be a common civilization. There was enough of a common view of the world, enough of the common view of reality, enough of the common set of principles and ideas about the things bigger than man, and a set of presuppositions about our relationship to nature that you could, you know, the Democrat versus the Republican, the big government versus the small government. These were conversations about how to best enact the best kind of outcomes for people in this reality that we kind of share enough of that we're kind of in the same world. Well, we're on the other side of that. I mean, when you have, I'm sorry, it's not because of just some radical religious belief, because my book tells me so, that I'm, I don't believe, the Bible says, or the book, the catechism says that life begins at conception because God puts a little baby soul in there, and the soul goes in, and that must mean God's a platonist, because the soul just comes from someplace else and goes in, and I believe that. So my book says it, and you got to abide by my book. I'm not... That's not our position. We believe that life begins at fertilization because every embryology text used in a medical school in the country right now says life begins at fertilization, right? And it's life that was started by two healthy human beings having unprotected sex and one of them getting pregnant because that person's egg was fertilized by the sperm. I mean, I'm sorry if you're young and you're listening to this. Spoiler alert. I don't want to slip anything in you don't want to know about. But the point being is that life happened inside a human person. Therefore, you can predicate the adjective human of it because it's not in a zebra. It's not in a dog. It's human and it's life. Therefore, it's human life. Now, it's living and it's human. I'm like, so yeah, technically it's human life, but come on. I mean, it doesn't look real. I mean, it can't feel much in it. It can't feel anything. And it's not, and if we can't do that, then if we can't have abortions, then women are just stuck and they can't go out and learn to do advertising and sell cheese. And if they can't sell cheese, then they can't, then they're subject, they're tied. Here's the choices. They can get up every day and go to work with a cup of coffee in traffic and sell cheese, or they are just barefoot and pregnant and chained to a stove with 15,000 kids. And they're just waiting for their husband to come home in the 14 passenger van so that they can go to the store. Those are the options, 80 hour work week selling cheese and being like men, or chained to a stove. But that's BS. Those aren't the choices. And let's go down there. If you go down that same rabbit trail there and you go, okay, great. It's human life, but not all human life is equal. And now I'm the arbiter of what human life is worth killing and not killing. And you just keep going down that Peter Singer psycho modern ethics rabbit hole until you end up in, oh, I don't know, Nazi Germany or Pol Pot or some of these people, you know, Rwanda. Oh, these people aren't real equal dignity human persons because they're, I don't know, Jewish or gay or Catholic or retarded or, you know, have Down syndrome or are blue eyed. They're not blue eyed and blonde haired. Or I mean, it's like you can, once you put it in your hands to decide what life is okay and what's not, what life is killable based on your perceptions and understanding, then you've gone down a really sketchy rabbit hole that ends with a guy like Peter Singer defending infanticide. So you can't do that. So now multiply that with, you know, the lack of gay rights versus religious liberty, and you can't, you know, some poor woman owns Memories Pizza in Indiana, and they say, hey, would you make a pizza to cater a gay wedding? And hypothetically, there was no customer. There was no gay wedding. Like any self-respecting, charming gay couple is going to go, hey, who should we get to cater our wedding? I don't know. Memories Pizza in small town Indiana. No, there didn't. There was no one. It was a hypothetical question. And hypothetical question answering pizza making woman said, I don't know. I think they would contradict my religion. I don't think I would do it. And she was attacked like she was a threat to the universe. They had, she, her and her business had to be destroyed. It's just like, so religious liberty, whole scale mass murder in the form of abortion. And then I don't know, some big dude with a beard is feeling kind of pretty one day and feminine, so he should be able to go into the same bathroom with my five-year-old daughter who's in there at Target. Really? When they hold these positions, they have stopped viewing nature, our relationship to nature, what we can know, universal moral principles, all the stuff. They've stopped agreeing on those things. There's no basis for friendship, because Aristotle says a friend is another self. And if you don't, but Aristotle also says, if you can't agree on first principles, then no real communication, no real dialogue can take place. So I would argue, and I'm not letting the Republicans off the hook. They've gone completely down the rabbit hole in a different way, but at least it's not the, let's just kill people because we don't think they're human rabbit hole. So it's a slightly different, not quite as bad rabbit hole. That was a way longer rant than I planned on doing. Damn you, abortion. Every time you come up, I end up having to do the rant. If you missed it at some point, go through the archives. At some point, I was reminded of this as I was explaining that two healthy human beings have sex and make a baby. I once did an episode of this show where I sat Planned Parenthood down, and over the course of a good portion of the show, I told Planned Parenthood the birds and the bees. I explained to them the nature of health and what health care would be, that healthy members of our species, when they have unprotected sex, get pregnant. And if you don't get pregnant and you're having unprotected sex with a member of the opposite sex, then someone is not healthy. So yeah, now I'm not letting you off the hook with in vitro fertilization too. Hey, let's make a bunch of, well, I hate abortion. You guys are horrible. We should shoot all you abortionists. Oh, I'm going to go to the IVF clinic because I really want to have a baby. So I'm going to make 13 extra and then kill them because it's babies. Come on. You like babies, don't you? Why do you hate babies? I'm in a mood tonight. I'm totally in a mood tonight. All right. So, man, that was supposed to be the second segment. I still have like 4 points of politics and news. I thought I gave up this politics and news thing for Lent. But I also gave up a lot of other stuff for Lent that I'm not being very good at. All right, let's go to the break. When we get back, I'm going to try harder. You're listening to The Counter Position.
Then all the color glass, that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to see. Love decked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dumb.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley. And we are in the middle of politics, news, and current events section that was supposed to be one small section, but it looks like it's going to be two sections, segments, quarters, 11 minutes, 50 second continuums. all right. So, Bannon is off the Security Council, Steve Bannon, former editor of Breitbart. And here's just what I want to, I listened to Rod Dreher from the author of The Benedict Option speak twice in the last week. And I've had this on my mind, and it's like, they said, that him with his white nationalist and racist ties, it's like, so this, the alt-right, and I've heard Bannon talk about Western civilization, Christendom, and all this stuff. See, here's the thing. You hear me, and I've talked about this before, I want to reiterate, you hear me talk about Western civilization. Well, that's become code word for European white people. No, that is not what I mean at all. So when we talk about the culture, what is the culture of Greece, of ancient Greece? It is language, politics, religion, your view of the universe. I mean, there's other stuff like clothes and food and stuff, but really it comes down to these core ways in which we live and view the world, right? And it's language, culture, it's culture, language, and religion to the great extent, And so now there are people who are white, who are white nationalists and who are racist, who cite all of that and have some of the same concerns that I have about Western civilization. See, here's the problem. They add blood to that list. So religion, culture, language, blood. See, there's where you go off. See, and here's the funny little thing. At the core of the center of what defines Western civilization as Western civilization, from Athens to small town America in the 1930s, is not... It comes down to the blood is not in the mix. And if you think blood is in the mix, if you think blood is culture, if you think blood is an aspect of culture, then you've gone over the falls, because go back to Athens, look at Homer, look at Greece. To be a Greek was not to have that blood. It was the language, the religion, the culture, the view of the universe. Including blood in that list is very contrary to the core of what Western civilization is about. Right. And I don't care if you're Hitler or you're LaRaza, everybody's like, oh, LaRaza, it's a Latino community organization. LaRaza means the race, the brown race, the Mexican race. It's like their motto, if I remember right, is something like, Para la raza todo, para otros nada. It's for the race, everything. For others, nothing. Now, if you speak Spanish and I screwed that up, have mercy on me. It's been a while. Sidebar, It seems like Mexican people in Denver are not like stoked when Anglos try to speak Spanish. In California, you try to speak Spanish, they super appreciate it. They'll help you with your grammar. They'll answer your questions. They're like super stoked that you're trying to learn their language. Denver seems like it annoys them. But the thing is, different parts of Mexico immigrate to different parts of America. And kind of, so I'm used to Michoacanos and people from Jalisco and stuff. I don't know who these people are, but they're, maybe they're the New Yorkers. Maybe they're the hardened East Coast people of Mexico. I don't know. But, okay, untime. Back onto the main track. So we, those of us who are believe in classical Western liberal education and, you know, and Western civilization and even Christendom, you know, that concept of the understanding clearly the role that Christianity played in the rescuing of that culture. And it wasn't just like, oh, we caught Western civilization on the ropes and went in for the kill to kind of get them on our team. Is no, I mean, Rome fell and the monks built monasteries and waited out the barbarians, the Visigoths, who were Christian heretics in themselves. But what they were copying, in addition to the scriptures and the church fathers and the great theologians, was Plutarch and Aristotle and Plato and Antigone, you know, Aeschylus and Euripides and all the Greek tragedarians and even the sketchy funny stuff, you know, the comedians and stuff, Aristophanes, you know, they were copying all that by hand, saving it for further generations in those monasteries. The Western Christian civilization saved Europe and the West from losing the culture that it had from before the barbarians. Now, the problem is that that culture from before the barbarians, that Greco-Roman culture that kind of became the Judeo-Christian culture of the West, blood was not in the mix. You know, so read the book Who Killed Homer. He'll list all this stuff that we've lost by turning away from Greek and Rome as the core of our educational system. Victor Davis Hanson wrote the book Who Killed Homer. Really, really worth reading. Pepsi protest video. Kendall Jenner. I mean, everyone's up in arms over this Pepsi protest video, and I'm like, of course, yeah, it's inane and it looks like a cheesy parody of their thing, you know, that they're using protesting and diversity and all that to sell sugar water. It's like, are you just waking up? Every single thing that has ever gotten popular at all ever with the populace of America, they have used to sell sugar water. It's totally normal. I can't, I mean, it's like, we're going to go, you know, breakdancing is popular. Here's a guy moonwalking over, does the wave, hand you a Pepsi. Skateboarding's popular now. Skateboarders sliding around, Pepsi. You know, it's every single time. And suddenly, they're all shocked that Pepsi would use some public movement to try to sell some sugar water. Of course, they're going to use popular culture to try to sell sugar water. And if you think that all these protests and a bunch of young kids in the street throwing televisions through windows because they didn't get their way is not pop culture, then you don't understand what pop culture is. It's the argument in shouting people down, but, you know, not letting anyone speak unless they agree with you and everything. This is a fad, just like, I don't know, pogo sticking or something. But here's what's funny is that here's why I kind of have, ironically, I kind of have hope, because all these people with all these movements and all this like love of diversity and all this crap, they were really offended by Pepsi selling sugar water with their movement, which I'm like, it's about time someone was offended. I mean, when I was young and I was a skateboarder, you know, one of the big brands would use a bunch of skateboarders in their video, in their commercial. And we would be like, that's pretty cheesy how they did that. Man, it's pretty cool that they're putting skateboarding and stuff. We just didn't really care. I mean, it was kind of like, well, it's good that somebody's noticing how cool this is. And, you know, and the other side was like, well, I mean, they're kind of manipulating me. I'm not going to go buy a Pepsi, you know, because I was a Dr. Pepper drinker and a Mountain Dew drinker if I really needed. But here they're kind of like not feeling the whole whole consumerism thing. And so, I just, here's the thing is that I wish the church, I wish we Catholics in the world with a Pope who's just ripping on consumerism and ripping on a throwaway culture. And I guarantee we would pay Pepsi to hand the Pope a Pepsi. In a commercial, man, we would love it. We would think it was awesome. In the name of evangelization, we're going to let the Pope, Pepsi, use an image of the Pope and have him drinking a Pepsi. I mean, we would sign up for that because we don't have a problem with consumerism and all that. We've just kind of made our peace with it because we're all good little Republicans. And no, it's fine. Global chains can just buy crap and that kills us and stick it in a can and slap a logo on it. And, oh, look, someone I like's drinking it. I should probably put that in my mouth hole. That's ridiculous. And we do not object nearly enough to that. And, well, I was going to talk about Assad and chemical weapons and how that's not cool. But what do you do with tyrants? In North Korea, I mean, if we take them out, they're going to, you know, shoot back in South Korea. But evidently, while I was doing the show, you can find out that I'm pre-recording this show. We just bombed Syria. So I'm going to kind of get a look at what's going on at the break. And we're going to evidently have a off-the-cuff, honest conversation about Syria when I get back, because I'm not going to talk about what I was going to talk about in the last segment because, wow, there's a lot of ramifications that. All right, we bombed Syria. All right, cool. Well, not cool, but maybe. I'm torn. All right, let's go to the break, and when we get back, I'll have myself together. You listen to the counter position.
I take your place in my old stone. I take your place, marble stone.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on the Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a shot in the dark, wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see. I'm a great kind of wall.
Welcome back to the Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, as I said, going to the break, we've dropped a bunch of bombs on Syria. Looks like we took out the air base from which they took off, the plane took off that went and dropped those chemical weapons on innocent civilians. Which I'm kind of freaked out by because friends of mine and people on Facebook were talking about this being a false flag thing today, which I'm like, is there any evidence that it was really truly a false flag? I mean, in the sense of that someone besides Bashar al-Assad did this to cause mayhem and fights. I don't know. But it looks like we dropped like 60 missiles. We shot 60 missiles from the Mediterranean and hit the airbase. And they are fairly sure that there were no Russian people there. And one of my friends is saying, rumor has it that they warned Russia. So, I'm just like, okay, chemical weapons, bad. Don't do that. He's done it before. So Obama was president back then. You know, I'm torn on this. Part of me kind of misses, you know, like Reagan, you know, like a third world dictator shoots down one of our planes and he puts bombs down the chimney of his palace. You know, he wasn't home at the time, but he kills people, you know, and they got a little more cooperative after that. Part of me thinks that that's the world we live in, and violence is the only language that we have to, the innocent language we have to speak. I hate that. I hate that I think that way. I hate that that occurs to me. And Rand Paul saying that he was supposed to come to Congress for an approval of war. Now, here's the thing, is that this is, I've talked about this before. One thing I'm not comfortable with is, like, you know, George Bush, you know, set up the T-ball stand, put the ball on it, picked out a really nice bat, and then, oh, hey, it's time for Obama, handed him the bat, and he just, like, hit it even farther, and, you know, we just took more and more and more and more power over into the executive branch, and all these Republicans sat there and watched while Bush did it, and people who have a more libertarian mindset, and the Rand Paul, Ron Paul types were kind of yelling that, you know, we might have to give this power away if someone else gets elected. And sure enough, 8 years of Obama, and he concentrated more and more and more power over in all these czars and executive orders and just tons of regulation. It just is the, you know, all these regulations and stuff that are basically equivalent of legislation. They affect people's lives like legislation. And then, so now we got a fully Republican Congress, and we have a Republican president. And so you're thinking, all right, great. We can now put government back in its place. And but here's the irony, is he's going, yeah, I'm going to undo this overreach, insert your pet overreach here, by a stroke of a pen with this here executive order. I'm going to use the power of the executive branch with a big fat executive order. And it's like, wait a minute. You just did, you know, I don't know. I've agreed with some of it. You just did maybe a very conservative thing in a super unconservative way. And so now seems like Trump still buys into the George Bush right to preemptive strike and all that. And I don't think he ever thought that, well, that's not true. Cause he did. He wouldn't think that we were attacked, but Rand Paul saying chemical weapons, horrible stuff, really bad. I feel really sorry for them. America was not attacked. Okay. You have to, you know, we cannot run around the world all the time. But part of me is like, on the other side, I'm like, you know what? We have power and money and weapons, and the Midwest is a little bit of a quagmire because we kind of got in the middle of it and helped make it that way. And if we can go knock out someone's base and now they can't bomb innocents with chemical weapons, and we should probably do that. And I am really torn because now the specter in the back is Bashar al-Assad. And I saw earlier today, the guy from Moscow, the spokesman for Putin, said that, you know, our support for Assad is not, you know, unconditional and guaranteed, you know? And so, I mean, even they were kind of distancing themselves after this chemical attack. Maybe they were distancing themselves both, you know, rhetorically and at the same time physically, because maybe they were warned, and maybe that's why the Pentagon is confident that there were no Russians at the airfield, because they told the Russians to get out because we're going to blow up the airfield. That's putting a lot of trust in the Russians not to tell the Assad regime that they're going to do that, and getting them out and all the chemical weapons out too, because Syrians are super good at moving chemical weapons. What do you think happened to all those chemical weapons that we didn't find, that we gave, to Saddam Hussein a long time ago. Oh yeah, they're all in Syria now. They probably use chemical weapons that we gave Saddam Hussein. Now those are pretty old at this point. I mean, part of me thinks I'm ironically kind of happy that maybe we have a president that Russia helped get elected, because, you know, at least they're going to say, it is kind of our own fault. That's our bad. Yeah, we did that. We put him in. So, I mean, they can't really be mad at what he did. It's like they kind of helped put him in there. That hasn't really been proven. But I lived through the Cold War. I'm old. I did those drills where it's like, oh, hey, we're going to have a nuclear war drill. Get under your desks. It's like getting under your desk is going to do anything other than go, oh, wow, I get to not see the shockwave coming from the mushroom cloud is now going to annihilate me and my desk. I mean, it was just simply there to make us feel better, you know, but I don't think modern youth can understand the Cold War and how we felt about that. And why that I remember being in the 80s and like waking up just in the middle of the night, not being able to sleep because I'd watched that movie The Day After, and I guess what it was called, The Day After, and it was about, you know, what it was, a kind of a realistic, like, what would it look like if a bomb got dropped in America? What if Russia attacked? I mean, you know, and we got ugly close with the Bay of Pigs and all that. I mean, it's, you know, there was the Cuban Missile Crisis and all that. I mean, it was at the Bay of Pigs, and Cuban Missile Crisis is what I meant to say. I mean, it's, we got close a couple times. Who knows how many times we got close and didn't know about it. But that was a very real thing. Look, kids, in case you don't know, I'm going to let you in a little secret. There, some of the big superpowers, especially us and Russia, we have enough chemical weapons that we could all get mad, launch them all at once, and then we'd all have about, you know, I don't know, a half an hour to kind of say our goodbyes, and then both countries would be holes in the ground. We could just destroy, or, you know, in some ways, maybe the best thing that could happen, they would put an EMP off. They would just drop a nuke and have it go off in our atmosphere. Then suddenly we wouldn't have lights or electronics or TVs or cell phones, or we'd have to learn how to build a fire again or something. That might, in fact, be a blessing in disguise after a ton of suffering. Once we figured out how to get cars going again, you know, a couple of years later, I could probably drive across Kansas without, you know, being unable to think about something for more than a few minutes. All right. So I don't know. I don't know what I think about this. I'm kind of in political flux right now. I'm becoming less and less on the Republican team. But at the same time, I've always gone between the Republican team and more of the Libertarian team, but with a dose of Catholic social doctrine. And part of me is like, I'm starting to question, because of the Enlightenment principles, the Locke influence of John Locke and all that, whether or not there's not some fundamental flaws at the core. And one of the fundamental flaws, if I end up going the full route on this, that I think about after listening to a philosopher the other day, I might have to apologize for something that Obama said. I took Obama to task over. But yeah, I happen to be in political flux right now. I feel like whenever I, when I stopped practicing back in like 06, and I was trying to work out a system for myself because I had turned my back on the system that I had in the religion, and a couple of things happened along that way, and I had to decide what I thought and what to do because I didn't have a system anymore, you know? And I'm kind of in political thought flux right now. I'm kind of questioning some stuff, so I don't know what I think about this. Part of me is like, yay, a bad guy did bad stuff, so another not very okay dude that happens to be our president, like, came along and killed a bunch of bad guys and said you can't do that. But that's really kind of like the kindergarten level narrative, right? I mean, it might be true a lot of times, you know, things are clearer to the young, but I just don't want World War III. And our involvement in the Middle East has just sucked. And it's just got a bunch of people killed and made it worse and worse and worse. And yeah, I'm also Rodney King quoting here. Can't we just all get along? Can we just maybe like raise some families, build some cool stuff, write some beautiful things, and nobody like try to like throw objects really fast with the help of machinery towards each other to kill each other. That'd be great. Anyway, let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition. See you next time so we don't get nuked.
Statues sing and take your place in marble stone. I take your place in marble stone. I take your place in marble stone.